With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello and welcome to the Analyst Insight Cricket on the last day of Test cricket for this summer of 2018. 4-1 to England, but not quite how expected.
Well, another incredible day's cricket. We thought yesterday was amazing, and it was, with Cook's 100, his farewell 100. But just for a moment today, or half an hour or so, we thought we were witnessing even more cricket history. It was always going to be difficult for India, hugely difficult to chase down 464. But during that double century partnership between Pant and Rahul, they just for a short while threatened it. It needed to go on. He needed to have the perfect chase from, you know, from 150 at tee or 160 at tee. And the ball was spinning sharply out of the rough from Rashid. So it was never going to be easy. But it was fantastic entertainment, wonderful entertainment. From 120 for five. I mean, who would have thought it? A double century stand, two guys making 100, one in 118 balls, one in 117 balls. Brilliant, thrilling batting on the final day. And there must have been one or two worried England players out there. And, well, not least the captain, Alistair Cook.
The captain,
Joe Root, who's already declared once in Test cricket and lost the game. But, you know, ultimately, just a bit too difficult. That's why it's so difficult to chase, 400 plus in a Test match.
It was another potential record of in a match of record-breaking achievements, because the highest run chase in a Test match, successful run chase, is 418. Yeah. So 460 to win was never really on. And actually, England always had that potential recourse to leg spinner bowling into the rough, which in the end, of course, actually worked the oracle, and that got the wicket. But it was an interesting contrast. But when you go back to that partnership of Rahul, the opening batsman, and Pant, Rahul in particular, an opening batsman, such a contrast to the man who's retired from this game, Alistair Cook, who, you know, we've said probably almost ad infinitum that he's an accumulator of runs, who nudges and nurdles and pokes balls for twos and threes and fours. Whereas Rahul is a classic striker of the ball who's really come through the IPL. In fact, he dominated the Indian Premier League last sort of springtime, and he just plays grand shots. I mean, he's a great watch, isn't he? He's a great sort of imperious driver of the ball and looking to play the pull shot and looking to be aggressive. And he got the 100 in how many balls did you say?
118 balls.
118 balls, yeah.
And 117 for Pant.
Yeah.
I mean, you could say, actually, you know, Alistair, it was reasonably fluent yesterday, but you could actually see the reason today why it was time for Cook to retire when you got two guys like this, two young guys.
The game has sort of moved on. That's what I was trying to say.
Yeah,
really.
just so fluent. Yeah. I mean, Cook's always played that way, though. I mean, his first test was... It's like his last test, or his last test was like his first test. That was slightly tongue-in-cheek. But, you know, they just made it look so easy. The runs were just flowing. England couldn't stop the avalanche.
I suppose in the end, England proved again that they just had a little bit more than India when it came to those sort of critical moments. In fact, if you look back at the series, there have been two very one-sided test matches, the one at Lord's obviously favouring England, the one at Trent Bridge easily won by the Indians. But the other three games have all been quite tightly contested, with the outcome sort of in the balance on the last day and certainly for the last sort of session or two. But England have come through before today on two of those occasions, both at Edgbaston, where probably getting Coley's wicket, Stokes LBW, got them home. That was probably the narrowest margin of victory. And then in that Southampton game, where Coley again got out, and then Moeen took key wickets, got the wicket of Coley, ricocheting off his glove, and a hairline decision by the umpire. So England won those sort of, where the game was sort of teetering one way or the other, England ran home, and again they did that today. 130-odd to win still, with five wickets left. You still thought, well, it's
one mistake,
it's possible,
isn't it? But
one mistake.
Yeah.
And there was, well, actually, in a way, it's a bit harsh to call Rahul being bowled by Rashid a mistake, because that was a Shane Warne delivery which spun about 2 yards. It was a massive delivery.
Yeah, what I mean by one mistake is you know, one error, whatever it is, one wicket, it just opens the game, changes it. And actually, talk about a mistake. And Pant, he couldn't help himself, and he was caught at long off. I would just take slight issue with it being a Shane Warne delivery. I mean, it was in one sense, because it spun out of the rough, but the batsman had been warned, whereas with Shane Warne's ball to Mike Gatting, there was no warning. It came, you know, it was his first ball of the series.
And also, two other things in Shane Warne's favour. Firstly, it was bowled from over the wicket, the Gatting delivery, which is a little bit harder to make it spin that far. And secondly, it was on a fairly freshish pitch. I mean, or second day. Was it the second day or the first day? I can't remember now.
Yeah, the second day.
But it certainly wasn't the fifth day.
Yeah.
So there wasn't as much rough for him to play with.
That was the point I was going to make, is that Rashid was bowling into the rough. The ball was spitting and bouncing. I mean, batsman being hit on the head, on the shoulder. It was, you know, beating the wicketkeeper. It wasn't a surprise that the ball turned that much. But it was a fantastic combination of bounce and spinning across, you know, enough turn and spinning across Rahul. I mean, it looked dramatic, and it sort of was a Shane Warne type ball, but in a way, it wasn't quite the same.
No, I understand the
drama involved.
Also, it didn't have the same batsman. The batsman wasn't quite as wide either, in the case of obviously Mike Gatting. And you know, that I love that line with Graham Gooch when he was at the other end, wasn't he? When Gatting was bowled by that ball, and he said, "Well, if it was a cheese roll, it wouldn't have got past him." It's an old line, isn't it? But still quite funny. Credit to Root for keeping Rashid going, actually, I thought, because the second new ball was due then, and he just gave Rashid another couple of overs. There was an over he bowled to Pant, which turned quite a bit out of the rough, and there was a couple of googlies and things, and one kept really low, and Pant kind of miscued and things. So Root, rather than going to his obvious default second new ball, Broad Anderson, he kept Rashid going and Anderson with the old ball, and that was the wicket. In fact, two wickets. He got both Rahul and then Pant out. So good captaincy by Root there. And then we have the pièce de résistance in this game was Anderson getting that final wicket. And it looked like it might not happen at one point, didn't it? But he just got it in the end.
It was all written. It's taken us 6 minutes, actually, to discuss, to even mention the name Jimmy Anderson, who finished it off and went past Glenn McGrath. I mean, just a remarkable achievement by Jimmy Anderson. And you know, the fact that I think the thing about him as well, I remember watching Glenn towards the end of his career, and he's a bit stiff.
Glenn McGrath.
Yeah, and he just looked a bit of a liability in the field. He was still a fine bowler. And Jimmy is, what, 36, and looks about 28, and he seems to be getting better. You look at his last three summers, 102 wickets at home at 15.8. Those are incredible statistics for a 34 to 36-year-old. He's obviously been more successful at home than he has away. 368 wickets at 23 at home, 196 wickets at 32 away. And if you just compare that with Glenn McGrath, who took 289 wickets at home at 22, 274 wickets away at 20.81. Glenn, you know, a better bowler away from home, a magnificent bowler. I mean, probably pound for pound, a better bowler than Jimmy. Even though Jim has gone past him, but do you think Glenn just a fraction better bowler?
No, I wouldn't actually. I would say Anderson is a more skillful bowler. I think the reason why I think Jimmy is a better bowler is because he can make the ball move in the air as well as off the pitch, whereas McGrath basically just relied on line and length and his height and long levers to get the ball to, he moved the ball off the seam, certainly, but he didn't really know which way it was going.
Bowling with a kookaburra ball, then?
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, that's a good point. Bowling with a kookaburra ball. But I think the thing with McGrath is because he's a line bowler, he has more control. You don't know on a day-to-day basis as a swing bowler, which Anderson is, whether the ball is going to swing or not, what condition the ball is in. You are more reliant on... Well, it's certainly early in his career, it was more reliant on a ball which was in good condition. Whereas I think latterly, he's learned other skills which have enabled him to be effective in non-swinging conditions. Now, obviously, McGrath was very consistent throughout his career, but he never had to worry about whether the ball was swinging or not. He just bowled the same length day in, day out. He was a machine. He was robotic. Yeah. He was sort of metronomic in his accuracy, which is a fantastic accolade. But actually, for pure bowling artistry, Anderson's better for me.
Well, he's a fantastic bowler to watch, Jimmy Anderson, and so skillful. For me, Glenn... just a little bit better.
Okay.
If you were...
I suppose you could ask... It might be a question, who would you rather face?
Or who would you not like to face
out of those two? McGrath would give you absolutely nothing and would probably get you out, whereas Anderson might give you a little bit more, but might also bowl the unplayable delivery, more likely to bowl an unplayable delivery. McGrath would just work you over and get you out in a different sort of way.
Yeah, clearly both fabulous... bowlers, absolutely fabulous. I mean, in a way, it seems unfair to sort of say which one is better than the other. Celebrate both their careers because they were both wonderful bowlers. And they both were wonderful bowlers. Jimmy Anderson, Alistair Cook's gone, but Jimmy Anderson shows no signs of wanting to go.
I was watching him actually play football this morning before play, and he was galloping up and down.
This is my point.
No,
like Glenn physically with Jimmy Anderson.
And you know, Anderson's now bowled. That was his 31,500th ball for England. McGrath did the 563 wickets in about 29,500 balls. So, in actual fact, it took 2,000 balls less out of McGrath to get those wickets. But Anderson, he runs around as a footballer or in the field like a gazelle. So I can see him getting 600 wickets. He could overtake Kumble, which is 619.
Yeah, and Anderson today... 13.3 overs, 9 maidens, 1 for 12 in his second spell.
Wow. Amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, his consistency is incredible. Now, I think he's almost more accurate than McGrath. McGrath had the extra ingredient of height. Mm. He was a bit taller, so he got a bit more bounce. And actually, his physique was probably better for fast bowling, ultimately, than Anderson, because he was that bit taller, therefore longer levers, and he... Remember how close to the stumps he bowled, actually?
Yeah.
That left foot landed almost on leg stump, so he was wicket to wicket. Absolutely, like, if you set a bowling machine up just next to the stumps in the nets and keep pinging it down to about 82 miles an hour on a leg, that's Glenn McGrath.
Yeah. Well, we're going to miss Anderson when he eventually does go, because he's just such a joy to watch, because he is just so skillful.
He's a magician.
Yeah, it's wonderful to watch him. Let's think about the series. England winning by 118 runs. We've sort of touched on it, you know, the tightness of the games. I mean, it has been, I think, one of the, you know, the most enjoyable summers that I can remember for, you know, a very long time in Test cricket. We had 2005, you go a long way to beat that. 1981, you go, you know, a long way to beat that as well. But, you know, we had things like, it's easy to forget, we had things like Scotland beating England at One Day Cricket. I mean, this is the team, England, and OK, they were missing one or two on the day, but this is the team that hoped to win the World Cup next year, beaten by Scotland. That was, I thought, was just an incredible day in Edinburgh. We had England beating Australia 5-0 in a One Day series.
I've forgotten that.
I mean, there's just been so much. And even the white ball cricket...
The turnaround in the One Day series
the
was interesting.
Exactly.
Actually, that seemed to give England... confidence and self-belief in a way after India trounced England in that first 50-over game. England then came back and won the other two, and it was suddenly their season was sort of off and running. Because actually, the Pakistan tests were kind of one all. You know, you sort of thought, well, are England really as strong as we like to believe, or are they as fragile as we actually forecast? Well, yes. They lost the first test of the summer to Pakistan, then came back well at Headingley. So, in a way, that the pivotal moment of the summer was winning that second one-day international against India.
Yeah.
And since then, I think they've only lost one game, the Test match at Trent Bridge.
So where is this England side then? They've just beaten the number one team in the world, 4-1, admittedly at home. They've got lots of talented cricketers. We had this conversation at the start of the series where you said you thought England would exploit India's weak batting. I said I think there are lots of holes in this England side that India can exploit. Well, they sort of did it to some extent, but actually, ultimately, you were proved correct that England, were just able to get into India's batting a bit more. Is it just going to be a case of good at home, bad away?
Well, I think until they find an opening pair, yes.
And what about some spinners as well?
I've been impressed with Moen, actually. Although the only thing about Moen Ali's bowling is, again, he's a bit mechanical. I don't think he's a bowling artist. He's not one who, on a flat wicket, can toss one up and entice the batsman into a mishit. He tends to be a bit repetitive, just bowling the same sort of pace and the same sort of line and length, which worked very well on a turning wicket at Southampton, but less so if there's not so much in the pitch and you've got good players of spin. So he's going to need some support. So in Sri Lanka, I'd want someone who spins it the other way. Rashid, for all his valuable wickets at the end of innings in this series, I don't think I would trust. He's a luxury, Rashid. So I would be more inclined to bowl somebody like Jack Leach, to have somebody like Jack Leach who is a bit more consistent and spins the ball away from the bat, in contrast to Moen Ali. And then they've got to find an opening pair, because otherwise there's no proper opening pair, there's no stability. And that's what England's problem has been all summer.
But do you not think that the fact that, because England got so many all-rounders, that they could actually, in a test match, quite comfortably have three spinners in Sri Lanka? They could play Rashid, yeah, Moen's going to go up the order anyway, and Jack Leach comes in for a pace bowler. It might be Stuart Broad.
There is talk, actually, isn't there, of Anderson playing one half of the winter and perhaps Broad playing the other. So you would have Anderson and Wokes, or Curran, I think, would be good in overseas conditions, foreign conditions.
He was named man of the series. It's going to be fascinating to see how Curran gets on say, Sri Lanka pitches.
I think he'll be good.
You've said this before.
Chaminda Vass, he's a similar sort of bowler to Chaminda Vass, and he'll get the ball to snake through low. I think the pitches in Sri Lanka are going to be snake pits, so they'll be turning a lot, but they'll also get grip and keep low for the seamer. So somebody like Curran, maybe round the wicket, bowling at the pads, will be effective. Sort of low, skiddy bowlers are actually quite good in the subcontinent, whereas the taller ones who try to get the ball to seam, like Broad, are not that effective.
So actually, you could see an England attack in Sri Lanka of Anderson, Curran and Stokes.
Yeah.
Pace.
Stokes, yeah.
And then the three spinners. Rashid, Moen Ali and Jack Leach. So really, Jack Leach comes in for Broad from this team, say.
Mm.
And then you need to find an opener. Yeah. I mean, it looks as if Keaton Jennings is going to keep his spot. So would you be that surprised if England's test team, the first test, is Burns and Leach in for Broad and Cook?
I wouldn't be that surprised, and I don't think that's a bad side. I do worry about Keaton Jennings as a long-term option. I mean, I have to hand it to Keaton. He walked up to all of us this morning on the pitch and, hello, how are you? We've been slagging him off in the media, and clearly he doesn't read thank God.
Well, not just slagging him off,
saying he can't play too well. He's not very good. And he's fronts up with a beaming smile and a jolly sort of good morning. I saw him joshing in the nets with Farbrace, and they all absolutely love him. And his enthusiasm, he's dashing around the field and getting involved in the football, even though it's not his natural sport. And he's a fantastic character who, unfortunately, just can't get a run and can't catch at the moment either. And I think in Sri Lanka, he might be OK, because it's mainly spinning pitches and spinning bowlers. But against good seamers, I just worry that he's a walking wicket.
What about Rishabh Pant, a young emerging star? Well, how good do you think he can be? He made a dashing 100 today, 114. That was a hot-headed dismissal.
I think he's a phenomenal player. I mean, he could be. I did say this at the time when he first played at Trent Bridge, and I was sort of slightly ridiculed, and I said he could be an Adam Gilchrist. And I really think that, because I know that he's left-handed a bit like Gilchrist, but he's just got that panache, that dangerous style of getting on top of the bowlers very quickly, difficult to bowl at. Joe Root, after the match today, called him dangerous, a dangerous player. Absolutely is. He can take the game away from you in a jiffy. I'm not sure that he's that good a keeper at the moment. He's had a real challenge this summer, keeping to bowlers going round and over the wicket, swinging the ball both ways. I'd like to measure the distance that he's had to travel from one side to the other when the ball is either angled from wide on round the wicket to over the wicket. He's probably had to cover from fourth slip on one side to fourth slip on the other side almost in the diving that he's had to do. There have been a hell of a lot of byes. Actually, someone should work out, maybe us, we should work out how many byes have been conceded or how many extras are being conceded by India, because that will be a telling number of runs given away, which in one or two tight games could have been crucial. India head off to, firstly, the Asia Cup, and then, of course, ultimately, the fascinating series against Australia down under, which will be a real test of India's strength away from home. They're still the number one team in the world at the moment, but certainly if they lose to Australia, they won't be.
Yeah, they want to prove something. They can win. You know,
which they've never done, have they?
It's alien conditions. What I mean by that is not so continental conditions. I mean in the likes of England or South Africa or Australia, and they have not won a test series in Australia.
Just one other thing to talk about before we go, and that is that the new Cricketer magazine is out this week, and we actually created a magazine this month that we thought would sort of reflect the great moments, or the greatest moment ever at the Oval in Test cricket, which of course isn't Alistair Cook's retirement or Jimmy Anderson attaining the world record for a pace bowler. It's that great D'Oliveira performance, Basil D'Oliveira in 1968, 50 years ago, when he made that amazing 158 in an Ashes Test match to level the series 1-1, was then, of course, after some uncertainty and people dropping out, he was picked in the England tour to tour South Africa that winter. The South Africans refused to accept him, and then, of course, the rest is history. South Africa were then excluded from world sport for 34 years. And in a way, D'Oliveira's performance was sort of almost actually brought about the end of apartheid in a kind of roundabout sort of way. So we thought that we picked on that as a sort of amazing recollection of 50 years ago here at the Oval, which has an incredible habit of producing memorable moments and famous retirements.
Well, yeah, absolutely. You go back to, obviously, 1948 and Don Bradman, Alistair Cook, there was that. I mean, talk about Cook.
Yeah.
You know, where you can't not talk about Peterson. You know, Peterson on the last day here in 2005, which was, you know, again, one of those great moments of cricket. Just that phenomenal innings on the final day, which sealed England's Ashes victory. It's wonderful. It always feels a bit melancholic at the end of the season. You associate the Oval with the end of the season and the last Test match. And we've got to wait, well, we've only got to wait a couple of months for more Test cricket and about a month for more international cricket. But for the home season, it's a long old wait and it's a dark old winter.
Well, it is, but don't forget there's still a few days to go of the county championship. Surrey close to sealing the title there, and there'll be other games of interest to try and secure promotion or avoid relegation. We'll be looking at those next Monday. We'll also be looking back at the T20 finals day, the Vitality Blast T20 finals day, and on Sunday it's the National Village Cup final at Lord's as well. So there's lots of things we can review this time next week, and of course there's that magazine to purchase as well. And if you go to www.thecricketer.com/podcast, you can get a 20% subscription rate off the subscription of the Cricketer magazine. So look out for that, and we'll talk to you on Monday next week.
Yeah, well, the cricket has stopped for now, the Test cricket, but it keeps on going, and we'll keep on going for the winter as well.
Thanks for listening.
Podcast Network.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office.
More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.